their whole family. And I think about, you know, how can I share that with the next generation? So I think what happens is that you look at what you love, what gives you joy, and that is what becomes easier about bringing that to the next generation. So I really do love the earth, and I love to garden, and I love to, I really truly do love reinstating and remediating sites. it's like you see it, you're like, oh, it's so much better, and oh, what was there before? And so I want things to look better, but not just aesthetically. I want the whole ecosystem underneath to feel better. I want the roots to talk to each other. I want the mycelium network to build up, and I want the soil to be fed every day in its own way. So I feel joy when I'm walking in the forest and I randomly see shells, and I'm like, ah, yes, you know, nature is doing its thing. The birds are trying to break open those shells, and they're leaving them in the forest. They're feeding the forest. They're, you know, we have faith as Indigenous people that we understand. You know, people will say, oh, but, you know, it was just empty land. And that was really sad, this place that has become Vancouver, that was just seen as empty land by the settlers. And we never saw that. We saw everything, not just in front of us, but down underneath. We saw it all. We saw all the beauty of everything it was, the giant, massive cedar trees that we all wish we would see in this era, you know. So I think about what can I give back to the youth of the future, and I, you know, with the work I did at Haushawise, I immediately argued that I had to have, I needed to be the one to choose the youth to work with, and I wanted them to be paid a living wage, and the first thing I said to them was, because on the first day, a couple of them were, as they said, late. I said, "You're not late," and they're like, "I mean, you guys have been here a couple hours." It's like, when did you leave home? And some of them were traveling from the island or Sunshine Coast. So they had to get up super early, get on buses, get on the ferry, get on other buses and to get there. So it was a bit of a, they've already worked pretty hard to get there. And I'm like, your day starts when you leave home. So whenever you get here, however much time you can put in. And, you know, it made the curator a bit nervous. I was like, don't mess with my flow. I know what I'm doing. And throughout that, like after that, you know, I saw the youth kind of coming in like this, but after I said that, I saw their shoulders up. And what I saw was that they felt that I'd taken a weight off their shoulder, that I know I've carried, and that I know so many of us have carried. Like, you want to show up for work, you want to show people that you can do things, but for me, the remediation doesn't just come in planting things and putting and fixing the soil. It comes in remediating ourselves as Indigenous people that are forced to live in this occupied environment of colonialism, and how it fights, like, what our connection to the ancestors are. And so I've always been attracted to working with people like Loretta Todd and Kamala, her daughter, and how they talk about indigenizing the landscape, and how they talk about an Indigenous city, and what does that mean? And it's made me really think, you know, it's made me really proud that I do know the artists that I know, because I only know a handful, I feel, from our community. I'm still meeting people, but it made me realize that what each and every one of them is doing is helping re-indigenize the land and helping the future generations be able to feel that pride, you know. And I've seen the difference in my experience in the city and my daughter's, and we're two different generations. And these visual elements that have come to be in the land because of these artists, you know, I'm just walking around. One day I ran into Splash, and there he was carving this beautiful piece for Britannia, a center I go to a lot. And it was like, it did that to me. It made my shoulders go up. It made me go, well, now I can walk by here and see something from my community. And And I listened to my mother talk about when she went to school. She was in residential school and in day school, and then she was, you know, never able to afford to go to post-secondary. Even though she tried, she just couldn't do it financially. And so she talks about when she was in school, she learned about the Hurons and the Wendat. She heard about the Mohawk people. And she heard about all these people, but there was not one story about the West Coast people. Like, not one. And when she would try to speak about that, she was shut down. And I know when I went to school, I was still arguing for that. And then when my daughter went to school, it was already transforming. The work that people like these artists have done and are doing was helping to put that into place. So, you know, the work at Hostelwise, I can definitely say, was very influenced by these gentlemen here. Because, well, my mom lives next door to Dr. X over there, Professor X. And so I see the Cedar all the time. I see these amazing people in their camaraderie and their love and the work that they put in. I hear the banter, the teasing. And all of that goes in there, and I know that things are going to be better, and they have been better. And as they said, there's just not enough of us, so just a lot of work. But when I did that work, I really, you know, I actually had spent some time, a few years, with one of their comrades, the late Hoya, Terrence Richard Baker. Also an artist and carver who spent a lot of time with all of these guys. I really got to learn more about our Salish form lines, and I really, or not form lines, but our Salish forms, and how, you know, like, it may seem so simple, but it's very complex. But it helped me to focus on those three elements, and then I really wanted to put that into the land. And I really wanted it to honor the land and the community. And so I fought for these youth to be part of it. I fought for them to have a living wage. And I went a further step, and I fought for them to become the caretakers of the garden. And because now they've learned something, and then it'll be taken away. So here's a great project, and now there's nothing else like this, so you won't do anything more. And that is how we fail our young people, that we train them and then leave them with nothing. And you can see that James has been raised in this beautiful nest of incredible talent, that they all continue to carry him. And that's why he's able to walk in the strength and beauty he is, because he's taking all of them with him along the ride. And that's what I wanted for these young people. I wanted them to, you know, and I still hire them. So now I'm going to be doing a big, massive project in New Westminster and recreating a forest. So I put forward my argument. I want to work with you. I want them to have a living wage. I want them to be part of this. And they said yes to everything. And I was like, what world am I now living in? Because that was not as hard as I thought. And they're really respectful. And I'm working with city engineers. I'm working with almost every department in New Westminster on this. So it's a bit humbling and it's a bit terrifying. But and then I go back to, you know, folks like these guys, and I know that they went off to Scotland for several years, somewhere unknown in the beginning, and then they kept going back, and that they nurtured this beautiful relationship. And I know that they've been doing work, all of them. They work together, but they also work on their own. And so I look at people like this in our community, and those are, you know, literally my pillars of strength, that I can feel more confident because of the time I've spent around people that are the experts in this work, and to give that confidence to the next level, so that to the next generation. So that's always my journey. You know, if I'm going to do something, the work I do, I need to have people help me, but I don't want them to be left behind. I want them to be in that canoe and keep going. Yeah. And in fact, one of the youth I worked with on the Hofstra Wise, first of all, the first thing that she did was get the design tattooed on her by one of the other youths. But then she went off to her own community and went to one of their master carvers and learned how to carve a canoe and up in the woods, and they brought it down to the water together. So it's like we are in a changing part of the world, something we've all dreamed about, but we still need more. So help us dream that reality is what I'm saying.
Thank you, Cece.
Thank you.
Hearing you talk about youth and the impacts and the reverberations makes me think of James when you shared the pebble dropping into the water and the way that one single gesture and continuous gestures can reverberate through community. And I also really appreciated hearing you talk about the education system transforming over time and the ways that those kinds of commitments are long-standing and continuous, and the ways that you raise youth up and you hold them up with you and they're beside you. And I feel that with everyone here on the platform, the ways that you work together and you can turn to one another because you keep lifting each other up. And it makes me think about the work, well, I've done that you've done in the education system with Indigenous youth, but also like youth from all kinds of backgrounds.
And that is the conclusion of part two of our three-part series of the seventh, Artists on the Radio. That is a co-production with the Orr Gallery and SFU Galleries here, of course, at SFU. Voices you heard in that discussion were artists Lauren Brevner and James Harry, and they are in conversation with Rick Harry, Cece Weiss, and Aaron Nelson Moody, with the conversation moderated by Orr Gallery Director Jen Jackson. That was part two of a three-part series. We'll be airing the final section on Thursday morning as part of Speak Up, starting in just a few minutes after 10 o'clock. Later today, part two that we just heard, along with part one, and the programs are contained within, will be posted up on our websites. If you want to listen to parts of that again, or you want to go back and listen to part one, they will be available on our website at cjsf.ca.
This is Bird Note. When Day Scott teaches people how to take pictures of birds, she emphasizes observing birds carefully before picking up the camera. Sometimes that means choosing whether or not to even attempt a photo, like the time there was a rare bird in her area, a painted bunting. The bird kept visiting a friend's backyard.
We knew where the bird was landing every hour, but I was not guaranteed to get a good picture, and I did not want to set myself up for disappointment. And I went over there and I sat for hours and hours, and I had to make a decision. Do I want to try to get a photo, or do I want to look through my binoculars?
A camera takes an image that lasts forever, but in the moment, Day would only see the bird with one eye through the viewfinder. In contrast, her binoculars would give her a high-definition view of the bird in real life. Finally, the painted bunting appeared.
I chose to see the bird out of the binoculars when it came. And I had the biggest smile on my face because I had never seen a painted bunting, and I saw it very clearly.
For Day, being an observer of nature is what lets her take great pictures.
I learned how to observe first, and if you get to know that species and its behavior, you have a really good chance of catching it in the behavior that you want to photograph. I teach right from the heart with my photography.
For Bird Note, I'm Jonies Franklin.
And joining me in the studio is Ayu Sakamoto. Hello, Ayu.
Hello.
You are here with a review.
Today I want to review the concert I attended about 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
And it's about the concert featuring the organ, pipe organ.
Mm-hmm. And who is the featured performer?
The performer is Spanish organist called Loreto Armandi.
Yeah. And you also interviewed Loretta, right?
Yeah, I interviewed her also 2 weeks ago before the concert.
Yeah.
And I really like her personality, and
it was a really nice interview. That interview is available online on our website. You can go find it under the Speak Up heading for the program that aired on February 12th. IU spoke with Loretta, and tell us about the concert that you went to.
Okay, yeah, sure. The concert took place on February 16th at St. James Church in Vancouver and featured the talented Spanish organist Loreto Armandi. And Loreto is an internationally renowned organist known for her incredible skills and performances all over the world. And 2 weeks ago, I had the opportunity to interview her, and she told me how much she loves playing the organ. And she mentioned how the sound of the organ varies from instrument to instrument, which is one of the things she enjoyed about playing the organ. And she had a concert in Vancouver last year as well. And she said it was a wonderful experience for her, and she was looking forward to coming back to Vancouver again this year. And since talking with her in the interview, I also have been looking forward to seeing her play. At St. James Church, there was a big pipe organ at the back, and we could watch Loreto play on the screen at the front. And there are various kinds of music pieces, from Baroque to modern music. And I was very surprised by the different sounds the organ produced, because I used to think that pipe organs only made powerful and majestic sounds, but I learned that they can also create very soft and delicate tones similar to the sound of a flute. And Loreto and her assistant would change the combination of pipes by pulling the stop knob, and it created a variety of interesting sounds. I never got bored and enjoyed every moment of the performance. Another surprise was that playing the organ seemed much more complex and difficult than I had expected. I knew that organists use multiple keys and play with their feet, but I didn't know that they sometimes rely on their feet as much as their hands to play. And it wasn't just simple melodies. Loreto also used her feet to play complex rhythms. And I was amazed at how smoothly she moved her feet without looking, even in fast-paced music, and how she created wonderful harmonies with the sounds created by her hands. I've been to many orchestra concerts before, but it was my first time attending a concert featuring only the pipe organ. And listening to its sound was so relaxing and even created a sacred atmosphere. So sometimes I feel like I was meditating, and the sound of organ has a way of transporting me to a different world. It also sparked my interest in the organ even more. And I love playing the piano, so if I have a chance, I'd love to try playing the organ. And also, Loreto is a wonderful organist, and I hope to have another opportunity to see her perform. And also, she's had concerts twice in Japan. So because I'm from Japan, I hope she'll come to Japan again in the future. That's all from me. Thank you.
Excellent. It's a fascinating instrument, the organ, because these are the like the big pipe organs that are,
yeah,
you know, it's essentially built into the church.
Built in the church. Yeah, it was so big. And yeah, I was surprised because of the so many different sounds. And yeah, they actually often pull the stop knob. Mm-hmm. And often the sound changed. So, suddenly, it's the different sound and different mm-hmm. sounds. So it was so interesting for me.
Very interesting. It'd be interesting to have someone actually explain how the instrument works. Because, of course, mm-hmm. you tend to think of an organ, you know, keys and stuff in the foot pedals. But then there's this whole other range of controls that they have access to I guess, to, you know, in different ways manipulate the sound. It's quite something.
Yeah. And I played the piano, and some of my friends said, oh, you're so good at playing the piano. It looks so complicated because we need to use the both of my hands, but the playing the organ looks more complicated because feet and hands. So,
and you said she's maybe coming back this year.
I'm not sure about her schedule, but mm-hmm. yeah, because when I interviewed her, she said, yeah, having a concert in Vancouver is wonderful. And also, yeah, she told me the experience in Japan. So, yeah, definitely she will come back. And
great.
Soon, I think.
So just before we finish up, what was her name again? And
Her name is Loreto Armendi, the Spanish organist.
Yeah.
Can I just tell the spell or of her? Loreto is L-O-R-E-T-O.
Yeah.
And Armendi is A-R-A-M-E-N-D-I. And she also has a YouTube channel and Instagram account. So if you want, maybe you can go to her social media or something and listen to her playing the organ.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, sounds like a fascinating performance.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you're planning to go to soon?
The concert?
Yep.
I think I will attend some also concert, classical music concert or something. I really like classical music. So that's why also it was so fun to attend that concert because some music is familiar to me, mm-hmm. the Baroque music, and I used to play in the piano.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Excellent. Okay, well, we'll be looking forward to your next review or any upcoming interviews.
Yeah.
And thanks for coming to talk to us today.
Yeah, thank you too.
All right. That was Ayu Sakamoto and her review of Loreto Armendi?
Armendi, I guess.
Yeah. Concert on the organ here in Vancouver a couple weeks ago. So thank you for that, Ayu. You're listening to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. And we'll be back right after this bit of music. Hey,
feeling.
All right, Bloodshot Bill. That was a track called Say to That. A little different than classical organ music. We're going to move on with a little update from Climate Connections, and then we'll finish up the show.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In the 1930s, Danish pilots wearing suits made of polar bear fur flew open cockpit planes along the coastline of Greenland. From the air, they took roughly 200,000 photographs. The images were intended to be used for mapping, but now scientists are using them to see how global warming has affected Greenland's peripheral glaciers, which dot the land around the central ice sheet.
And these glaciers are really important to study because they contribute significantly to sea level rise.
Laura LaRocca worked on the project while at Northwestern University and as a NOAA Climate and Global Change postdoctoral fellow. Using the Danish images, military photos, and satellite data, the researchers found that Greenland's glaciers retreated throughout the 130-year study period, but their melting sped up over the past two decades.
Glaciers are now retreating at a rate roughly twice the rate observed over the 20th century.
She says the study highlights the urgent need to limit global warming.
It's just a stunning landscape, and it's really sad to see the loss of these glaciers.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
And we're just about out of time here for today's program. thanks to our co-producers at the Org Gallery for the seventh Artists on the Radio presentation. Again, we'll be featuring the final performance of that the final segment of that on Thursday at 10 o'clock. Thanks to IU for coming up today.
Yeah, thank you for, today.
my name is Magnus Tiefold. I've been your host today, and IU has been with us as well. Mm-hmm. We're going to finish off with a bit of music from Loreto Aramendi. Hope you enjoy. Coming up in a few minutes is Democracy Now!